just outright. Grab the wallets. What the Iran crypto seizures reveal about self-custody, stablecoins, and the privacy narrative. Speaking at the Reagan National Economic Forum on Friday, May 29, 2026, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent disclosed that the United States government has, since the outbreak of the Iran conflict in late February 2026, seized approximately $1 billion in cryptocurrency assets linked to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, and other sanctioned Iranian entities. The exact phrasing Bessent used in a Fox Business interview at the forum, "I believe that we have seized about $1 billion of their crypto. Just outright grabbed the wallets. Some of them may be typing in right now and might not realize that their wallet has been grabbed." The disclosure is consequential for several reasons. The dollar magnitude, $1 billion in crypto assets seized or frozen, is the largest cumulative sanctions-related crypto seizure on the public record. The mechanism Bessent described, direct seizure of wallets without the holder's knowledge, represents a meaningful escalation in the public discussion of how the U.S. government engages cryptocurrency in enforcement contexts. The geopolitical framing that Iran was using these assets to fund the IRGC and to attempt to collect tolls from commercial vessels passing through the Strait of Hormuz connects the seizures directly to the maritime choke point dynamics that this catalog's earliest essays, Articles 1 and 2, engaged in the context of de-dollarization and the Mingirian theory of monetary emergence. But the single most analytically important consequence is what the Bessent statement, taken seriously, says about cryptocurrency itself. For approximately 17 years, from Bitcoin's launch in January 2009 through to the present, a central element of the cryptocurrency narrative has been that the technology offers a form of monetary instrument that is resistant to seizure, resistant to censorship, and outside the reach of state authorities. The Treasury Secretary of the United States has now publicly stated, in a forum widely attended by financial press and policy figures, that the U.S. government has been seizing such instruments at scale, that the seizures often occur without the holder's knowledge, and that the operational capability is sufficient to extract approximately $1 billion from the target population in roughly 90 days. The framework's cryptocurrency trilogy, Articles 13, 14, and 15 of this catalog, argued in the abstract for what the Bessent statement now demonstrates in operation. That cryptocurrency's salability properties are sharply heterogeneous across instrument types. That stablecoins specifically face structural confiscation risk built into their issuer architecture. And that the broader crypto as monetary sanctuary narrative obscures more than it reveals about the actual operational properties of these instruments under state pressure. This essay engages the Iran seizures as the cleanest single empirical validation of those framework claims that has occurred since the trilogy was published. This is the 9th installment of Watching the Cracks. It proceeds in 5 sections. First, the documented operational facts of the seizures, what was taken, by what mechanism, and on what legal authority. Second, the distinction between the kinds of seizures that occurred and the implications of each for different cryptocurrency instrument categories. Third, the Strait of Hormuz dimension, which connects the seizures to the framework's earliest essays on the geopolitical mechanics of monetary emergence. Fourth, the framework's prior analysis from Articles 13, 14, and 15, and how the Iran case operationalizes the salability claims that the trilogy made theoretically. Fifth, the implications for households, the broader crypto industry, and the framework's forward analytical program. A note on framing before proceeding. The Iran sanctions program is well established, U.S. policy spanning multiple administrations. The IRGC has been designated as a foreign terrorist organization since 2019. The legal authority for the seizures discussed in this essay is straightforward and not in serious dispute. The framework's analytical engagement here is not with the legitimacy of the sanctions program. That is a political question. This essay does not adjudicate, but with what the operational mechanics of the seizures reveal about the underlying technology. The framework's posture is the same one it has maintained throughout the catalog, descriptive rather than advocational, focused on structural properties rather than political judgments, with explicit acknowledgement of where the evidence permits stronger claims and where it does not, what was seized, and how. Bessent's $1 billion disclosure aggregates several distinct enforcement actions that have occurred between late February 2026 and late May 2026. The actions fall into 3 operationally distinct categories that are worth distinguishing carefully because the mechanisms differ in ways that matter for the broader analysis. Category 1. Stablecoin issuer freezing. The most clearly documented single action was Tether's freezing of approximately $344 million in USDT across two Tron blockchain addresses on April 23, 2026. The two specific addresses, TTIDLWE6FZKAOMJ6IJ42WIREH6W2EPSAR9 and TENE9AXBP9EUGDWARFAAU2ZH1, were both frozen on the same day with balances The freezing was coordinated with OFAC's updated designation of Central Bank of Iran. Linked addresses, which followed the next day, on April 24, 2026. The mechanism, Tether, as the issuer of USDT, retains administrative control over the smart contract that implements the token and can mark specific wallet addresses as ineligible for transfers. The frozen tokens still exist, on-chain in the original addresses. They simply cannot be moved. From the holder's perspective, the tokens are functionally confiscated. They remain visible, but unusable. This is the cleanest mechanism, technically and legally. Tether is a centralized issuer of a stablecoin that exists by virtue of Tether's contractual commitment to maintain dollar reserves backing the tokens. The company has consistently complied with OFAC sanctions enforcement, has, on its own disclosures, frozen roughly $4.2 billion in USDT across more than 7,200 addresses in previous enforcement actions, and operates under business and legal frameworks that require such compliance. The framework's Article 15 analysis specifically identified this property, that stablecoins exist within and depend upon a centralized issuer apparatus, as the structural feature that distinguishes them from genuinely decentralized cryptocurrencies. The Iran seizures provide the most visible operational confirmation of this property to date. Category 2, exchange mediated seizure. Some portion of the $1 billion total involved cryptocurrency held in custody at centralized exchanges. Treasury has published no breakdown of the total by mechanism, but the exchange layer is where Iranian crypto activity concentrates. A Reuters investigation published in May 2026 documented Nobitex, Iran's largest cryptocurrency exchange, as a keynode in the country's parallel financial system, processing hundreds of millions of dollars for state-linked institutions. Exchange. Mediated seizures operate similarly to traditional financial account seizures. The exchange holds the cryptocurrency as a custodian on behalf of the user. And when legal process is served on the exchange, the exchange can freeze or transfer the assets without the user's cooperation. The user's ownership of the cryptocurrency at the exchange is a contractual claim against the exchange, not direct possession of the cryptographic keys that control the underlying tokens. This category overlaps with the broader pattern of cryptocurrency exchange compliance with sanctions, enforcement that has been documented across the past decade, Coinbase, Binance, Kraken, and other major exchanges have all participated in similar enforcement actions on substantially smaller scales than what is now being applied to Iran-linked accounts. Category 3, direct wallet seizure. This is the category that Bessent's outright grabbed language most directly describes, and it is the most analytically interesting. The mechanism for taking direct control of a cryptocurrency wallet without the cooperation of any centralized intermediary requires obtaining the private keys that control the wallet. The framework's analytical question, how does the U.S. government obtain those keys? Several mechanisms are operationally available and have been used in prior cryptocurrency enforcement contexts. Compromise of operational security at the target organization, intelligence agency penetration of IRGC computer systems, communications, or operational personnel can yield private keys or seed phrases held in those systems. This is the most straightforward technical mechanism and has been documented in multiple prior enforcement actions, including the Justice Department's June 2021 recovery of 63.7 BTC, then worth approximately $2.3 million, from the Colonial Pipeline ransom payment, where the seizure affidavit stated that the FBI held the private key to the destination address without disclosing how it was obtained. Exploitation of operational security failures in the target's wallet management. Many users, including sophisticated ones, store private keys or seed phrases in ways that are recoverable by an attacker with sufficient access, cloud storage, password managers, encrypted but not air-gapped backups, screenshots, paper notes in compromised physical locations. Intelligence services with substantial technical resources have multiple paths to recovering keys stored under these conditions. Compromise of the underlying cryptographic implementation. This is the most consequential category, and the one the frameworks Article 14, BIP 361, and the post-QDAY environment engaged most directly. Where the wallet's key generation depends on cryptographic primitives that have been weakened through quantum capability development, through implementation vulnerabilities, or through compromised random number generation, keys can in principle be recovered without any direct access to the holder's systems. The framework does not have evidence that this mechanism has been used in the Iran seizure specifically, but the technical possibility cannot be excluded. And the Besant statement's specific phrasing may be typing in right now and might not realize their wallet had been grabbed is more consistent with this category of capability than with the operational security categories above. A holder whose key was recovered through operational compromise would generally notice unauthorized access to their other systems. A holder whose key was recovered through cryptographic compromise might genuinely have no operational indication that anything was wrong until they attempted a transaction. Coercion of cooperating individuals, where keys are held by specific individuals who can be reached through diplomatic, military, or covert channels, the keys can be obtained through pressure on those individuals. The framework has located no public documentation of this mechanism in the Iran enforcement. It is listed here as an operationally available path rather than an established one. The framework's reading, the specific mechanism by which any given wallet was seized in the Iran enforcement, is not publicly disclosed and may never be. What the Besant statement does is establish that the operational capability for direct seizure exists at sufficient scale to extract approximately $1 billion in roughly 90 days. Against targets sophisticated enough to be running the financial operations of a major state intelligence service. The mechanisms by which the capability operates are interesting. The existence of the capability is what changes the analytical landscape, the Strait of Hormuz dimension. The geopolitical context for the seizures is essential to understanding why this particular enforcement program has produced visible results that prior programs have not. The framework's Articles 1 and 2, published in mid-April 2026, in the immediate aftermath of the Iran war, engaged the Strait of Hormuz as a Mangerian theater for monetary emergence. The argument, Iran's attempt to collect transit tolls on commercial vessels passing through the strait, originally proposed in yuan and subsequently expanded to include Bitcoin, was a textbook example of Menger's mechanism, by which alternative monetary commodities emerge through specific use cases that create localized but compounding demand. The Strait of Hormuz handled approximately 20 million barrels per day of oil before the conflict, on Energy Information Administration figures, 20.9 million barrels per day in the first half of 2025, roughly 20% of global petroleum liquids consumption, plus substantial liquefied natural gas and dry bulk shipping. Flows fell almost 30% year-over-year in the first quarter of 2026 to 14.6 million barrels per day. Iran's geographic position along the northern shore of the strait gives it physical access to vessels transiting the choke point. The IRGC has historically used this position for harassment of commercial shipping during periods of diplomatic tension. The 2026 toll regime was a more formal extension of that capability. The IRGC began extracting transit tolls from vessels in mid-March 2026. Iran's parliament approved a Strait of Hormuz management plan at the end of March that codified what was already operating, and a newly constituted Persian Gulf Strait Authority was launched on May 18, 2026 to administer transit permits. Payment has been reported in Chinese yuan routed through Kunlun Bank outside SWIFT in Bitcoin and in USDT. With permits for a fully loaded, very large crude carrier reported at up to $2 million per voyage. Iran's Hormuz Safe, a Bitcoin-settled maritime insurance platform launched in mid-May 2026, developed by Iran's Ministry of Economy, with policies approved by the IRGC-backed Persian Gulf Strait Authority, and claimed by the Fares News Agency to be capable of generating more than $10 billion. was an attempt to provide a payment and insurance mechanism that could operate outside the conventional maritime insurance markets that U.S. sanctions had foreclosed to Iranian shipping. The framework's Article 2 reading, this is the operational form of the Mangarian dynamic, with Bitcoin as one of several candidate substitutes for U.S. dollar settlement. What the Iran seizures demonstrate is that the U.S. government's capability to disrupt this substitution has been substantial enough. In the specific period when Iran was attempting to implement the Hormuz toll regime to make the substitution operationally infeasible, the $344 million tether freeze of April 23, 2026, and the OFAC update of Central Bank of Iran designations the following day came roughly 3 weeks after the first public reporting of crypto-denominated toll collection, Bloomberg on April 1, 2026, on tolls paid in yuan and stablecoins, and the Financial Times on April 8, 2026, quoting a spokesman for Iran's Oil, Gas, and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union on tankers paying in digital currencies. The framework does not read the sequence as coincidental and reads the enforcement action as a demonstration, in operational terms, that the IRGC's planned Bitcoin-based toll collection apparatus would not function as a sustainable financial pipeline. The framework's reading of this dynamic is precise. Iran's attempt to use cryptocurrency for Hormuz toll collection failed, not because cryptocurrency is technically incapable of functioning as such a payment rail, but because the specific cryptocurrency instruments Iran was attempting to use, primarily USDT on Tron, face structural confiscation risk at the issuer level that the IRGC's operational sophistication was unable to defeat. A more carefully designed scheme using genuinely self-custodied Bitcoin transferred between hardware wallets with operational security sufficient to defeat intelligence service interdiction might in principle have functioned. The IRGC did not implement such a scheme. It relied on USDT, which exists by virtue of Tether's smart contract administration, which Tether and OFAC could and did freeze. The framework's Article 2 prediction was that the Hormuz toll dynamic would be a Mangarian emergence event, the kind of localized use case-specific demand for alternative monetary instruments that historically produces durable shifts in monetary geography. That prediction has not been falsified. It has been partially constrained by the demonstration that the specific instruments available for such emergence are structurally vulnerable to the existing Reserve Currency Authority's enforcement apparatus. The framework's Article 13 saleability audit of cryptocurrency identified this vulnerability for stablecoins specifically. The Iran case demonstrates the vulnerability in operation at scale. What the cryptocurrency trilogy got right. The framework's closed cryptocurrency trilogy, Articles 13, 14, and 15, made specific structural claims about cryptocurrency that the Iran case now empirically validates. Three claims in particular are worth revisiting against the operational evidence. Claim 1 from Article 13, Bitcoin saleability is genuinely high on most Mangarian criteria, but the freedom from political weaponization criterion operates differently than the conventional crypto narrative suggests. The Iran case demonstrates the claim's operational form. Bitcoin held in self-custody, with operational security sufficient to defeat intelligence service interdiction, retains substantial freedom from political weaponization in the precise sense Menger identified. The framework's Article 13 was careful to specify this. Bitcoin's resistance to weaponization is conditional on operational security and self-custody, not absolute. The Iran case shows that operational security can be defeated by sufficiently resourced state actors, but does not contradict the underlying claim that properly implemented Bitcoin self-custody is structurally different from stablecoin or exchange, mediated cryptocurrency holding. Claim 2. From Article 15, stablecoins are the operational form of the privatized digital dollar, with the privatization extending the enforcement reach of the dollar issuer rather than escaping it. The Iran seizures are the operational confirmation of this claim. Tether's $344 million USDT freeze on April 23, 2026 was, in substantive terms, an extension of OFAC's enforcement authority through a private issuer's smart contract administration. The stablecoin user holding USDT against the dollar enjoys the upside of dollar-pegged liquidity without the downside of traditional banking system enforcement reach. except that the downside has been reconstructed at the smart contract level. The framework's reading, stablecoins did not escape the dollar enforcement apparatus. They extended its reach into the cryptocurrency layer with substantially less procedural protection than the traditional banking system requires. Claim 3. From Article 14, the cryptographic substrate underlying cryptocurrency is itself a structural variable that the conventional industry analysis treats as a constant. The frameworks, Article 14, engage the BIP 361 post Q-Day environment as the specific case where cryptographic substrate variation mattered most. The Iran case extends the structural observation into the more general territory of operational security and key recovery. The question of how, exactly, a private key gets from being a closely held secret to being in the operational control of a state intelligence service. The framework's reading, the cryptographic substrate's strength, is one dimension of the problem. The operational substrate's strength, key management, communication security, organizational practice is another, and both dimensions are vulnerable to state actor capability in ways the conventional industry analysis does not adequately price. The framework's broader cryptocurrency trilogy thesis was that cryptocurrency, taken as a single category, exhibits dramatic internal heterogeneity on salability properties that the conventional industry discussion flattens. The Iran case demonstrates this heterogeneity in operation. Tether USDT held in identified addresses faces near certain confiscation risk under sanctions enforcement. Bitcoin held in cold storage with sophisticated operational security faces meaningfully lower, though not zero, confiscation risk. Exchange mediated cryptocurrency faces traditional financial account level confiscation risk. And the specific operational mechanisms vary across all of these in ways the framework's salability analysis distinguished correctly. The narrative collapse. The cryptocurrency industry's public-facing narrative for most of the past decade has prominently included some version of the following claims. Cryptocurrency is uncensorable money. Cryptocurrency is outside government reach. Cryptocurrency is private and pseudonymous. Cryptocurrency is a hedge against authoritarian seizure. Cryptocurrency is the people's money, free from state control. The Bessent statement at the Reagan Forum, taken at face value, contradicts each of these claims at the operational level. The framework's reading is not that the claims were uniformly false. They are conditionally true under specific operational configurations against specific threat models for specific cryptocurrency instruments with specific assumptions about the holder's technical sophistication. The framework's reading is that the conventional industry presentation of these claims has consistently elided the conditional structure in ways that produce systematic overconfidence among ordinary users about what their cryptocurrency holdings will actually do under stress. The Iran case provides a specific, dramatic, and verifiable counterexample to the unconditional version of the claims. The Treasury Secretary of the United States, in a public forum, said, "We grabbed the wallets. The holders may not know yet. We have approximately $1 billion. The statement was made to demonstrate U.S. enforcement capability. Bessent was not making a philosophical point about cryptocurrency properties. He was making a deterrent statement about IRGC financial vulnerability. But the statement's significance extends beyond the Iran context. It establishes, on the highest available official record, that the operational capability exists, that it is being exercised, and that the targets are not necessarily aware when it is being exercised against them." The framework's specific analytical observation, this is structurally analogous to what the January 30, 2026 silver crash, Article 24, demonstrated for the precious metals layer. In both cases, the framework's prior theoretical claims about substrate fragility were operationally validated by a specific event that made the underlying mechanism visible at unusual clarity. In both cases, the visible event does not invalidate the broader monetary instrument category. Silver is still silver. Bitcoin is still Bitcoin. But it does invalidate specific assumptions about how the instruments behave. Under stress, paper silver is not physical silver, identified wallet. USDT is not self-custodied Bitcoin. The legitimate response within the cryptocurrency community has been substantially more sober than the broader public discussion has reflected. Sophisticated participants have for years understood that USDT is structurally a Tether liability rather than an independent monetary instrument. That exchange custody is fundamentally different from self-custody, and that the privacy properties of various cryptocurrencies vary by orders of magnitude across instrument types. The Iran case has not surprised these participants. It has, however, surprised some portion of the broader user base that absorbed the unconditional version of the industry narrative without internalizing the conditional structure. What households should take from this? The framework's specific operational observations for household readers with cryptocurrency exposure. The seizure mechanisms that worked against Iran can work against any holder. The Iran case demonstrates capability, not target specificity. The same Tether smart contract freezing that immobilized $344 million in USDT held at addresses OFAC determined were controlled by the Central Bank of Iran can immobilize any other USDT holdings that OFAC subsequently designates. The same exchange-mediated seizure that reaches custodial holdings at a sanctioned exchange can reach any other exchange held cryptocurrency that is subject to legal process. The same direct wallet seizure Besant described can grab other wallets where the operational or cryptographic conditions for grabbing are met. The legal targeting Iran in this case is independent of the technical capability which extends to any target the legal framework can reach. Stablecoin holdings should be understood as smart contract claims, not as monetary instruments in the traditional sense. A USDT balance is functionally a Tether liability that has been tokenized for blockchain transferability. The transferability is real. The underlying nature of the claim is not different from holding an unsecured Tether IOU. The framework's reading, stablecoin holdings are appropriate for transactional purposes, including holding modest amounts for the purpose of moving value between cryptocurrency markets and traditional banking. But they are not appropriate as a long-term store of value against substrate fragility concerns. The structural vulnerability the Iran case demonstrated applies regardless of who the holder is. Self-custody operational security has become substantially more important. Cryptocurrency users who have absorbed the narrative that Bitcoin is uncensorable money without implementing the operational practices that would make that claim true, cold storage, geographic distribution of seed phrases, separation of holdings across multiple wallets, regular operational security review, are operating under threat models they have not actually defended against. The framework's recommendation, any meaningful cryptocurrency holdings intended as substrate fragility hedges should be held under operational practices commensurate with the threat model. The post-quantum cryptography transition matters more than the conventional analysis suggests. The framework's Article 14 engages this dimension in detail. The Iran case does not establish that quantum capability was used in the wallet seizures, but it does establish that something extracted approximately $1 billion from sophisticated sanctioned targets in roughly 90 days. And the specific Besant phrasing may be typing in right now and might not realize is more consistent with cryptographic compromise than with operational security compromise. Households with cryptocurrency holdings should monitor the post-quantum transition closely. Wallets using cryptographic primitives that the BIP 361 framework specifies as quantum vulnerable should be migrated to quantum-resistant alternatives on the timelines. The BIP 361 process, geographic and jurisdictional considerations, now matter for cryptocurrency holdings the way they have historically mattered for traditional financial assets. The U.S. enforcement apparatus that operated against Iran-linked wallets can in principle operate against any wallet whose holder is subject to U.S. jurisdiction or whose intermediate transactions touch U.S. regulated services. Households whose cryptocurrency holdings are motivated by substrate fragility hedging should think about jurisdictional exposure the way wealth management professionals have historically thought about it for offshore traditional accounts, with explicit attention to which authorities have legal reach against the holdings under various circumstances. The framework's reading. Five framework observations follow directly from the Iran case and what the Besant statement establishes. First, the framework's prior cryptocurrency saleability analysis is operationally validated. Articles 13, 14, and 15 of this catalog argued structurally for what the Iran case now demonstrates empirically. Cryptocurrency is not a single asset class, but a heterogeneous category whose saleability properties vary dramatically by instrument type. with stablecoins facing particularly acute weaponization risk that the cryptocurrency industry narrative has consistently understated. The Iran case is the cleanest single empirical validation of these claims to date. The framework's prior analytical work in the cryptocurrency space holds. The empirical evidence has caught up with the structural analysis. Second, the privatized digital dollar architecture identified in Article 15 has produced exactly the enforcement extension that the framework predicted. The stablecoin issuer apparatus operates as a private extension of the dollar enforcement system, with smart contract administration providing real-time confiscation capability at substantially lower procedural cost than the traditional banking system enforcement mechanisms require. The framework's reading, this architecture is not going away. The stablecoin industry's regulatory engagement, the Genius Act, enacted in July 2025, and the various stablecoin issuer compliance frameworks is in substantive form an institutionalization of the issuer as enforcement extension pattern that tethers compliance with the Iran sanctions exemplifies. Third, the Hormuz toll dynamic. The framework identified in Article 2 has been partially constrained but not eliminated. Iran's attempt to use cryptocurrency for toll collection failed in the specific 2026 instance because the IRGC's operational implementation relied on stablecoins that the issuer could. Freeze. A more sophisticated implementation using genuinely self-custodied Bitcoin with adequate operational security could in principle have succeeded. The framework's prediction. Future state actors attempting to escape U.S. dollar enforcement will learn from Iran's operational mistakes, will implement more sophisticated cryptocurrency arrangements, and will produce a continuing dynamic in which the U.S. enforcement apparatus is forced to develop counter-capabilities while the alternative monetary geography continues to compound. The Mangurian emergence dynamic is not defeated. It is in iteration. Fourth, the crypto-privacy narrative has been substantially weakened as a marketing claim. The framework expects this to produce visible effects in the broader cryptocurrency adoption pattern. Households previously attracted to cryptocurrency primarily for privacy reasons will recalibrate based on the demonstrated empirical evidence. Some portion will exit, some portion will reorient toward instruments that genuinely deliver the privacy properties they originally sought, Monero, Zcash with shielded transactions, mixers, and similar approaches. Some portion will continue holding cryptocurrency for non-privacy reasons, speculation, payments, programmability, with explicit acknowledgement that the privacy dimension is weaker than they previously understood. The framework's reading, the cryptocurrency market, will produce visible composition shifts over the next 12 to 24 months as the privacy narrative recalibration plays out. Fifth, the broader catalog substrate fragility thesis continues to accumulate empirical validation across disparate sectors. The framework's prior installments have documented substrate failure or near failure in banking. Article 16, housing, Article 17, 18, and 19, measurement systems, Article 20, property rights, Article 22, credentialing, Article 23, and precious metals, Article 24. The Iran case adds cryptocurrency to the list. The pattern is not that each individual sector is failing simultaneously. The pattern is that the substrate layer dependencies that the framework's analytical approach identifies are visible across all of these sectors when subjected to specific empirical tests. The framework's broader claim that monetary architecture in 2026 has accumulated substrate fragility that is no longer fully visible in conventional aggregate indicators is supported by the cumulative weight of these specific cases. On October 31, 2008, an anonymous developer using the pseudonym Satoshi Nakamoto published a white paper proposing a purely peer-to-peer version of electronic cash that would allow online payments to be sent directly from one party to another without going through a financial institution. The Bitcoin network went live in January 2009. The Genesis block contained a now-famous encoded message, a reference to a January 3, 2009 headline from the Times of London, Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks. The technological achievement that Bitcoin represented was real. The cryptographic architecture was novel and well-designed. The economic incentive structure was carefully calibrated. The implementation worked, and continues to work, in essentially the manner the original white paper described. The framework has consistently engaged Bitcoin and the broader cryptocurrency ecosystem with respect for what the technology actually accomplished. What the framework has equally consistently argued is that the narrative that grew around the technology overstated the practical implications of the technical achievement in specific ways. The technical achievement was a payment network that operated without intermediaries. The narrative claimed that this implied freedom from state authority. These are not equivalent claims. State authority operates through many channels, only some of which involve intermediaries in the traditional banking sense. The 17 years since Bitcoin's launch have included sustained development of state capabilities to operate against cryptocurrency at multiple levels, through stablecoin issuer compliance, through exchange-level enforcement through cryptocurrency analytics firms, through cryptographic compromise capability development, and through the broader institutional apparatus that the framework's catalog has been documenting. Treasury Secretary Bessent's just outright grabbed the wallets statement at the Reagan Forum on May 29. 2026 is the cleanest single demonstration of these capabilities operating at scale. The statement is striking not because it is unexpected. Sophisticated cryptocurrency participants have understood these capabilities for years, but because it is officially confirmed in a public forum by the cabinet officer responsible for the operations. The narrative had room to operate while the capabilities were merely suspected. It has less room when they are publicly disclosed at scale by the executor of the disclosed program. The framework's cryptocurrency trilogy claimed in the abstract that cryptocurrency's salability properties were heterogeneous, that stablecoins faced structural confiscation risk, and that the privacy narrative obscured more than it revealed. The Iran case validates those claims with a $1 billion empirical demonstration. The framework's analytical posture remains what it has been throughout the catalog, descriptive of the structural reality, attentive to the heterogeneity that aggregate discussion flattens, and explicit about the conditions under which various claims hold or fail. Cryptocurrency continues to exist. The technology continues to function. The legitimate use cases continue to operate. The honest version of the narrative is just smaller than the marketing version has been, and the Iran case has made that gap visible at unusual clarity. The next installment of Watching the Cracks will engage whichever empirical event most demands framework engagement when it arrives. The watching continues. The structural validation continues to accumulate. The framework's broader case for taking substrate fragility seriously across multiple sectors continues to strengthen as the specific events keep arriving in the empirical record. This is the ninth installment of Watching the Cracks. The framework's predictions recorded here for future testing. Stablecoin issuer compliance with sanctions enforcement will continue to extend rather than retreat over the next decade. Future state actors attempting to escape U.S. dollar enforcement through cryptocurrency will produce a continuing iteration of capability and counter-capability. The cryptocurrency market will see visible composition shifts toward genuinely privacy-preserving instruments over the next 12 to 24 months as the broader narrative recalibration plays out. The post-quantum cryptography transition will become increasingly consequential as cryptographic compromise capability development continues. The Bessent statement at the Reagan National Economic Forum on May 29, 2026, is the catalog's reference point for U.S. cryptocurrency enforcement capability as of the publication date. Sources: Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent at the Reagan National Economic Forum, Friday 29, May 2026, reported the same day and the next by Fox Business, The Block, CoinDesk, and Bitcoin.com. Two quotations were corrected. The essays, "We Just Outright Grabbed the Wallets," used in the title in the closing, carries a "we" that the reported wording does not, corrected to the reported form. And, "Might not realize their wallet had been grabbed." Is, in the reporting, "Might not realize that their wallet has been grabbed," corrected in three places. The cumulative figure: roughly $1 billion of Iranian crypto seized on Bessent's 29 May account, against nearly $500 million in his 29 April remarks, a doubling inside a month, and framed in contemporaneous coverage as the largest cumulative sanctions. Related crypto seizure on record. The war began 28 February 2026, which makes the 90-day arithmetic in the essay exact. One basis point, the $1 billion aggregate seizures and freezes, and the $344 million of frozen USDT is immobilized rather than in government hands. The essay's actively controlled crypto assets overstates that, and the distinction is now drawn. The Tether Freeze. Tether froze $344 million of USDT at two Tron addresses on 23 April 2026. Both named in Chainalysis reporting that month, TTIDLWE6FA and TNIC9AXBP9. The related OFAC designation update for the Central Bank of Iran came on 24 April 2026, one day after the freeze, rather than the same date as the SA had it. See Treasury's recent sanctions actions. Tether's own disclosures put its cumulative freezing at approximately $4.2 billion across more than 7,200 addresses. The SA's hundreds of millions understated it by an order of magnitude, which strengthens rather than weakens its argument about issuer-level control